Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking scotch. What are you drinking tonight, sir?
The last of my Occulto beer. So last three bottles lined up, and we're going to kill it tonight.
Phenomenal. Oh, man. You know, this is a very interesting week for me because, you know, I love Spartan Games, but I was so pissed off. And, I mean, we'll talk about it, but, like, you'll start to, like, feel the rage for something that I've genuinely been very, very positive mm-hmm. about up until this point. To say the least, it's the main topic of today's show, but it is total garbage. So, hey, get ready for that. That's going to be fantastic. But, hey, let's dive right in here. Let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. Nathan, what were you up to?
Just a ton of painting. Didn't really get any gaming in this week, but I did manage to get some more work done on my Malifaux. I finished up some War Machine. Really, I'm just kind of bouncing back and forth between everything. But I have decided that the next thing I'm going to do, because I also converted up four pathogen mediums, is I'm going to have a stab at painting those, because I have an idea that that sounds good in my head, but we'll see if I actually have the skills to pull it off. So,
does it involve putty?
What?
Does it involve green stuff?
Well, the green stuff ships are already done. I'm talking painting. So they're done, they're primed.
Ah.
We will see if it actually looks good, and we'll see the light of day. Because, you know, there is that Firestorm tournament coming up.
Yes, there is. For me, I've primarily just been continuing to read. I'm just about done with Scars, which has been very good, actually.
Scars surprised me because yeah. The White Scars were never a legion that I cared for.
No, I still don't care about
interesting. You, no, you just still don't. But it's an interesting book because I expected it to be, I won't say unreadable, but just really fucking boring.
You know how I joked about the Blood Angels and the Dark Angels and all that kind of stuff where the Blood Angels are just always amazed. They're just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, they were always just confounded by everything.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing is, like, the thing that I find most funny about the White Scars is that they're just the biggest whiners. Nobody even cares about, we don't even care that nobody cares, but oh my God, nobody even cares about us. Like, nobody even asked us if we wanted to come to Ulanor. Like,
right?
Come on, man. Like, first off, we don't care. That's the thing I want to establish right now. But, oh my God, the Emperor doesn't even, like, they just, they try so hard to, like, play them as these kind of, like, aloof, you know, on the fringe hunters, but all they ever seem to do is, like, complain about how nobody really cared and, like, oh, the Khan's the best Primarch, but not like anyone would notice. But, yeah, there's that. But otherwise, the book is really good. I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to the end. The Khan and Perturabo just, or not Perturabo,
Mortarion.
Mortarion, that's the one. Starts with an M. And Mortarion have come to blows, but I haven't really gotten too far into that fight yet, so I'm coming near the end of the book. But it's been pretty good. I'm looking forward to it.
They throw down.
Yeah. I've been trying to get games, but, like, the games just keep getting canceled. Like, the last 2 weeks have been the absolute worst for trying to get games in, and now, with my parents coming into town next week, we're just in this, like, cleaning fury.
Got it.
So, yeah, good times. Good times all around. So, hey, let's move on to the weekly listener poll. The question that we had for you guys was, how many games are you currently actively playing? And 33% of you said one. One game. The runner-up was two, followed by three, followed by four, and then with a surprise twist of fate, followed by six. And there's one person who plays five.
At first I was just like, is this like a Texas, like, sixth grader's attempt to count to six? One, two, three, four, six.
Now, they'll just write the textbook to say that that's how God wanted it.
Yes, that is absolutely right. Correct.
You know, it's not a surprise to me that the majority of people out there play one game. I think once you start branching out into multiple games, it really does start to kind of move in toward, like, I actually play three or four, you know, I've got a whole bunch mm-hmm. in the wings. But yeah, the majority playing just one game, that's not a huge surprise to me. For the longest time, that was all. That was it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all I played was 40K for the longest time. Branched out a little bit into Warhammer, but again, like, those are basically the same game. In yes. terms of, like, oh, you play Warhammer? It's just, it's Games Workshop. That's what you play.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, now, like I said, I probably actively play about three or four games. So I'm kind of one of the few people who voted in that range. And so for you, Nathan, what was it that you voted for on this one?
I voted for four because, I mean, I was counting D&D. So, I mean, I'm actively playing D&D, still loving the shit out of Wild West Exodus. Been getting War Machine games in of late. And then I just kind of lumped in board games in general as my number four, because I've been playing a lot of board games. So, you know, and quite regularly, like that's the thing for me is like with all of those that I wanted to talk about, it was really just very regular.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm absolutely the same as you. I remember when I got into it, it was 40K or death. And even though there was that bullshit of compliance, oh, fucking compliance.
Games Workshop compliance.
Yeah, so compliance, for those of you that never worked for Games Workshop, was a policy that said that you have to buy and paint, which is hilarious for your, like, minimum wage wages.
Minimum wage part-time wages for some of us.
Yeah, you had to buy and paint a tournament size, which is an arbitrary number, army for every one of Games Workshop games. So at one point, I did have a Lord of the Rings faction when I stopped working at Games Workshop in Chinook. I just left it in the case because I knew that I would continue to play zero games with it the way I had played zero games with it before. And all I did was go diving through the back box for like all the mismolds and shit to get all my heroes. I bought one single box, which at the time was $25. So with discount, I paid like 10 bucks. And then just fucking shit them out dry brushing. Did my whole, like, 15 model elf army in, like, a day. And I was like, here you go, Darren. He's
yeah,
like, this is really bad. And I was like, I don't even care.
Yeah, for me, like, Lord of the Rings was definitely the one that I did not want anything to do with. And I still, to this day, don't really want anything to do with. There was this short period of time where I kind of was playing the game going, you know, this game's got some potential. I might actually, and then it broke it. Like, the next release came out and it just, everything fell apart. But yeah, like, I had done a mixture of Heroes of Gondor and Elves and, like, Aragorn. And that was my army for good. And then my army for evil was Uruk-hai, and just Uruk-hai because they were the most expensive and they were cheap and they were easy to paint. It was just, like, tin, dry brush, flesh. I guess I'll paint some hands on them. And then that was it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's compliance for all you people. So, yeah, good times. I remember my first compliance Warhammer army was my Orc army, which I just recently got rid of. And it was the most mishmashed, weirdest Orc army you've ever seen, because what I did was I bought a starter kit, got another half of a starter kit, and then converted all of my heroes from that. And like, that was virtually my entire army, was just like 2 to 3 starter kits worth of orcs. And I just like, I'd converted my shamans. I converted my heroes. I'd fucking converted everything. Mm-hmm. And then it was just chariots and like a couple of spear checkers and like a doom diver. Like, that was it. That was my whole fucking army. It was great, man. I hated it. But then I fell in love with Warhammer, and Warhammer became the new muse, right? But yeah, all right, so let's go to some comments here. Matt says, I voted 1 because 0 wasn't an option. After Age of Sigmar, I went through all the emotions. Denial, time to paint my empire, I'll still play 8th. Anger, forget GW, I'm going to play Hordes, and I got the Trollbloods army box. Hope Kings of War might be all right, but the full rules still aren't out yet. Since Age of Sigmar, I've played one silly game of 8th, and I'm bouncing around with starter sets of Hordes, Infinity, and Firestorm Armada. I'm hoping to have 1, maybe 2 solid games that the community plays regularly. Yeah, that was all of the emotions.
Yeah, right?
Yep, he got them all.
Yeah, well, and I mean, yeah, again, with...
Well, and he didn't put like a period at the end of the last sentence. So I assume he died. That's just my assumption.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, you're right.
I'm no scientist.
The castle of... No? No Monty Python love?
Fuck no,
love.
Not at all.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
This kind of episode already. All right. We got.
So, Ian says I voted 2.
The makeup sex is going to be incredible.
Exactly. I was going to make a joke about diarrhea, but... All right, so... Ian says I voted 2 because 2-ish isn't an option. I mostly am playing board games these days since my wife will play Settlers of Catan or Space Hulk after a few beers, but nothing heavier. So I get my hardcore gaming fix in spurts. Heh heh, spurts from the local gaming club and mostly just paint these days. I think for a lot of people, 2-ish is pretty much like they play one and they're interested in maybe looking at others. Right, mm-hmm. Where they might look at stuff and go, oh, okay, well, you know, this looks interesting. Or like the way a lot of people treat Firestorm Armada here in Alberta, yes. Where a lot of them are like, you know, there are some people playing this. Firestorm looks cool. And then they just kind of have stuff.
Yes, 100%. Because, yeah. I mean, even here, like, I would say that if you pulled out all the stops and everybody showed up, we'd have probably close to 20 people showing up to an event. With that being said, there's probably only like 4 of us who claim that it's just like, no, man, Firestorm is my jam. Like this is game number 1 on the list. It's very small, but a whole lot of people have it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Alex says at the moment 4, Firestorm, Planetfall, Zombicide, and AVP. Could have been 5, but haven't played D&D in a few months, so not really active. The relative time spent between those 4 varies wildly. However, some weeks Zombicide will be all we play, but at the moment it's Firestorm. I think more than 3 or 4, and it's difficult to devote enough time to really get into a game's flow or keep up with gaming buddies. And I think that that's true. I don't know if it's true that you would be, like, 4 is where it becomes, untenable, where just, you know, I mean, Wolverine's on, like, 8 teams. In the Marvel Universe, and like every day he goes and fights with a different one. When he's not
like,
dead.
Does he have to clock in and out? Like, do you think that they're like, who, which
he's just
Marvel
racking up time and loo with the Avengers. That's all it is. Corporate living joke. No, but yeah, I think active playing would be like, you get a couple games in a month, maybe, right? Like, Through a month or two, I'll put a couple of games in to each of those ones that I would say is on my list. Mm-hmm. And then it's more of like, depending on what everybody's in the mood for, we all will, gravitate toward that one game, right? For the meantime, it's D&D and Planetfall, Dice Masters, Firestorm Armada, and then like every once in a while, something will just pop up and somebody will say, oh yeah, we should go back and play this, you know? Strange Aeons, the second edition was released, and now people are like, let's play Strange Aeons.
I am also want to get more Strange Aeons up. Because, I mean, with that high buy-in of one single blister pack that you need to paint 3 models for, it's hard to convince people. No.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly lister poll. You can find those at jdgamercast.com. We will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if we remember. So let's move on to the main topic of today's show. We're going to kind of skip over the model of the week because we do have a bit of content to go through here. We are going to be talking Planetfall. Recently, the newest edition of Planetfall rules for the core armies were released to include the aerial helixes. We've seen the models. We've talked about them. They're cool. We're excited. And yeah, I alluded to this earlier. I'm going to go ahead and come right back to it. This release was a complete clusterfuck piece of shit.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask the question. I mean, I know why, because we've been complaining a little bit on Hangouts this week. But what about it is the clusterfuck piece of shit? Is it the rules for the aerial healers, or is it something else, Lang?
It's a combination of 2 things, Nathan. Yeah, the rules for the aerial helixes are a bit strange. The balance is a bit off, the points are a bit weird, and it's hard to kind of get what they were using as the measuring stick to say this is worth this and this is worth this. But that isn't really the big thing. The big thing That has always been with Spartan Games releases. They don't have an editor and nobody proofreads. So the, like, almost every single Core Army PDF that I looked through the day it was released had errors in it. Multiple errors in it. And I even went, the day that I saw them, and posted a comment on Spartan's, one of Spartan's pages. Now, they don't let people actually post comments on their fan page because they don't want to deal with that shit. So I just had to comment on one of the posts that kind of referenced it, and I put a screenshot of a fucked up thing that they fixed, or that they screwed up. And I mean, like, this is simple stuff. Like, this is stuff that you instantly notice when you read it, which means nobody's fucking reading it. So, since then, they have actually posted two corrections. So they posted the correction for the Directorate, and they posted the correction to the Cerulean, which were the two biggest ones, because they were completely fucking disaster. Like, nothing made sense. And they still didn't fix a lot of the problems. Like, there's still errors. Even after they posted the fix, there's still errors. Like, apparently I needed to go highlight all of the things that didn't make any fucking sense on the thing. It just, it blows me away how bad this is. Like, does nobody even give a shit when they put these rules out? Like, is nobody looking at this going like, well, we've basically screwed up the game for, you know, the couple of days that this is out before we fix it for anybody who wants to play with it?
And the weirdest thing about it is the way Spartans releases for Planetfall, they fucking know. They give us a month in advance, so you can't tell me that these are all 11th hour things. Like, there's absolutely no reason to be waiting for, because we had to wait until, what, Monday for these to be released? So yeah. The 31st or the 1st was when they came out, despite them all shipping and releasing on the 28th. So there was actually about 3 days where people could have had the models and could not have actually played with them.
Right.
So then they wait, and they get all this, and you're just like, but why? You know, you've known this release is coming. Why have these rules not been out and polished? You know, I'm not going to even talk about game balance or playtesting, because we have played no games with it. I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to are inconsistencies in Orbats, things that just make no sense. How's it going, Dendrenzi heavy infantry that cannot be taken? Still can't take them. No. You know, so it's just like there are so many weird fucking things in these rules, and you're just like, I don't get it. I don't get why we get this, because this is every release for Spartan, with at least with Planetfall. Every release, we will get Orbats pushed out, or Firestorm rules, or what have you.
Right.
And then we'll immediately, later that day or early the next, get a new version that's fixed some of the more glaring errors. And then we'll get a third version that's kind of what you'll live with until we start song and dance all over again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's actually just jump into it here. We've talked about just the general shittiness of what's in here. And we'll kind of talk about, like, the particular errors when we get to them, because there still are errors that people have to deal with. And there's still just some weird things that don't make any sense that we'll have to deal with. But we'll talk about them when we get there. So, obviously, this isn't just the aerial helixes that have been added to the game. They have made updates to particular units in each army. Directorate
being, of course.
Yeah, which is par for the course. They are making tweaks. This is kind of the living rulebook style, which is cool. We like that. The Directorate, once again, seem to have been given kind of the heavier load of changes. But and again, because I play it, obviously, I'm kind of excited for a lot of these.
You know, it's funny because I've always suspected, and I feel like every release just vindicates me, Directorate are the force that Spartan loves the fluff of. The idea of the Directorate is super cool, and they have no fucking idea what they want them to do. Because every release, Directorate gets a hodgepodge.
Yep.
Sometimes it's very good, sometimes it's kind of not great. And that's both Planetfall and Firestorm. Like, we saw Directorate be the biggest losers on defense platforms. Then we get, like, a Planetfall release. You're like, this doesn't make sense. Then they'll update Planetfall and be like, oh, this is really cool now.
Right.
They just have no idea what to do with you.
Yeah, I think Directorate are supposed to be the hodgepodge. They steal technology, they steal everything, they're just super rich. So they kind of have a little bit of everything.
They're the 1%, literally.
They are absolutely the 1%, which is what I posted on Facebook for the for the Firestorm tournament coming up, because I'm playing full corporate. All right, so let's dive in here. Let's actually talk about it. I'm going to quickly go over the changes for the Directorate, and then we're going to end that off with the Aerial Helixes. We'll talk about it a little bit as we go through. Now, one of the things that you'll notice when you actually get into the Directorate PDF, the Orbats, when you make your way down to the Directorate Interceptor Aerial Helix, you see two stars. An aerial helix chosen by a battle group may either be ground attack or interceptor. Well, that's kind of interesting.
I was going to say, that's really interesting, Lang. Why don't you tell me the difference between those two options?
Well, the interesting thing is, interceptor is not referenced in the unit entry at all. They are called interceptor, kind of, sometimes. And the actual rules that are in these particular entries are aerial assault and dogfighter. So there's actually no mention of interceptor here at all. Same thing with ground attack. There's no mention of it at all. There's no mention of the points. There's no mention of, do I give up aerial assault when I take ground fighter? Nothing like that. You just, you know, figure it the fuck out is basically what it comes down to.
Well, maybe this is Spartan's ode to Age of Sigmar, and we're supposed to just make up our own rules in order to play them as either ground attack or interceptor, which is why you've got a pair of asterisks.
Yes. If you kind of want to know how ground attack works, you can go to some of the other Orbats and look at, like, for instance, I believe the Terran Orbats. When you go to Hawker's heavy attack fighter has the ground attack rule, and then you can read it there and then understand what it means. Yeah. So basically what it means, for anybody who's not sure, the interceptor rule and or I guess also aerial assault rule is you can move flat out and target flying models, and your shots are considered to be rushed. If you have ground attack, you can move flat out and target ground models, but the shots are considered to be rushed. That's the difference.
Maybe.
We're assuming, because it's not here at all. It's not referenced. There's nothing here. There's no points. Do I buy it as an upgrade? Am I trading? Am I picking one? Who the fuck knows? It just has it as a rule. And if you're one of the poor bastards playing Tindrenzi, you don't even have that rule, because even though there's a little star on the breakdown of your choices, there's actually no rule. So unless you are a Dendrenzi player who's also going to go back and read all of the other PDFs, you're completely missing that rule. It's just not in your – it's just not.
Well, but I mean, that's fine, because Dendrenzi also get, like, the best ship for the same points as everyone else. So they don't really need all of these extra fancy rules.
Apparently. So there was a fuck up on the Leviathan, where like one of the Leviathan's weapons also had terror for some reason, and then the other one didn't have terror and the ranges were different, which they fixed because they have the pacifier plasma cannon. And then if you go down to the heavy support tank, the Castigator, it also has a pacifier plasma cannon with different stats and so on and so forth. But basically what they've done is they've added a special rule to the heavy support tank that is splash damage. When fired from this tank, you also gain terror on your pacifier cannon. They also gave it a longer range so that its range tends to actually match more with the tank hunters that you get as part of the heavy helix, which is very nice.
Yeah, it's not bad. And I mean, TV4, who gives a shit about throwing one of those out there?
Well, and that's the other thing. Like, a lot of the Directorate stuff saw a TV reduction. So they're, before this tank was giving up 5 points, now it's giving up 4.
I feel like that actually matters. Like, that makes it more worth taking.
Yeah, again, we're not going to break down all the numbers and the changes for you guys, primarily because we don't have them all memorized. But for the most part, yeah, you did see some TV reductions here and there for these guys. But in general, Directorate did get a buff. The medium crawler got a slight buff to its strength at long range. So just your regular old medium tank.
4 to 5, right?
Yep, 4 to 5 at long range. And again, TV reduced from 5 to, I think it was 5 or 7 to 4 or 6, depending on the size of your unit.
Which is nice.
What is really cool is that the medium tank destroyer gained hard target.
That is a really nice change.
Yes, so its weapon now matches the medium crawler's weapon. So whereas before it was 80 with 6 at effective range, and then its long range was 5, which was kind of, you know, give one, take one from the medium crawler, now their weapons are the same.
With different
except,
range bands.
Except for the fact that the Tank Hunter has a longer range band, has one less DR on both of its hull points, has hard target now, which I love. I think that's absolutely fantastic. That makes me very, very, very happy.
Absolutely.
Some points reductions here and there, but again, I'm not going to get into it too much. It's nothing dramatic. It's just a couple of things got a little bit cheaper here and there. Drone launcher still useless. Cyber Warfare Tank got one additional strength to its Cyber Warfare weapon, which is cool.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, that what I was found playing against you is that your 12AD Cyber Warfare struggled against any meaningful targets. I feel like 14AD is going to be reliably punching a cyber warfare attack onto heavy support, like heavy tanks, which is where you want them to be. You want to be disrupting heavy tanks instead of mediums. But now you can reliably do it, and I like that change.
Yeah, and their DR went up, so it's 7-7, just like the main tank as well, which is nice. So, again, a little bit tougher, still cloaked. They can now upgrade for 15 points per tank to have their scramblers gain the interceptor mar. But honestly, there's no real reason to do that.
I was going to say, where does it say that?
If you go to
because it says that. No. I see that, but I can buy the AA-118. Do I have to then
second page
up to see what that does?
Second page. AA scramblers is cyber warfare interceptor.
Indeed, it is. Yes. Got it.
That's where you look. Recon buggies got a little bit cheaper again, which is nice. Now, what's awesome here is actually the Directorate Combat Carrier got two more AD on its weapon, and it gained Assault Vehicle.
Oh, that is really nice, and it makes Directorate Infantry, which are already one of the biggest World Destroyers, even better.
Yeah, it's really, really, really good. I was super happy to see that, and I really like the fact that now I can play really aggressive with them instead of using them as like, well, I got to hang back. Got to hang back until the time is right, otherwise it's
just going
to put them out.
They were always your last activations.
Yes.
Because, I mean, like, I know that I've done that with, you know I do that, with my spider tubes, where it's just like, they are my last activation because I want to just overwhelm with all of them, but with your combat carriers not having Assault Vehicle, you always try to out-activate your opponent. So you'd be able to do the backs and actually treat like an assault vehicle, but it's nice that they have it.
Yeah, exactly. The Anarchist Light Tank can be a squad of five now, just like the amount of models you get in the box.
Well, that's nice.
That is really nice. Somebody was thinking. Other than that...
It upsets me how much Interceptor the director had. As a Real Fossil player, I am genuinely upset, because I just keep looking and seeing that fucking icon on everything.
Yes. The Directorate Heavy Infantry got one more strength on their cyber warfare weapons. And there we go. We are here. We are at the Aerial Helix.
God, a 20AD cyber warfare attack? Fuck
yes.
You, Leviathans.
Big times. So, Directorate Aerial Helix. So, Nathan, what was your first impression of these guys?
The Directorate one or Aerial Helixes in general?
The Directorate Aerial Helix.
I think it's okay. I mean, it's an aerial helix, so its movement is really great. It has a really good CQB that I was happy with, and I mean, survivability, DR, the fact that it's cloaked. I mean, I love cloaked elements. I wasn't happy to see it have a cyber warfare attack. Honestly, I was hoping that a heavy gunship was going to just be pure firepower, because that is lacking out of the Directorate. Even your squadrons of heavy do not throw out as many dice as my heavies do. Like,
no.
Directorate have never had that one big, heavy-hitting, like, look at my 24 attack dice. Like, I'm just going to point it at something and rip through it. So I was kind of disappointed to see that you do not have weapons that you can combine. You have two separate weapons of AD-12 because Cyber Warfare Mar cannot combine with other ones. So you're just like, well, I've got a okay cyber warfare attack, and we just talked about how your cyber warfare at 12 weren't super reliable, and then you've got an interceptor at 12, which, again, is not going to be super reliable, but it is very survivable. I think 7.76 flying element with cloaked is – it's going to live a lot longer than you think it's going to. I like the fact that it's a drone nexus because it plays well with your heavy infantry.
Correct.
But otherwise – it's it's okay.
Yeah, one of the things that I really do like about what they've done with both of the flyers that are available for the Directorate is that they've stuck with keeping them loaded with missiles with an all-around arc, which makes moving them very easy in the sense that you can just turbo fly over a unit and then shoot your missiles backwards into their rear armor. Like, yeah, you're only hitting on fives because of ground attack and the fact that you rush, you went flat out, but rear armor, it's great. Everybody loves it. But yeah, for this guy, I feel like the big thing for him is that you take him because you want to take the drones. You want to take
and those drones are incredible. The interceptors are the stars.
Yeah, and so he's the prerequisite. Hey, he's a drone nexus. Yes, I can use him with my interceptor drones, and I can use him with my heavy drones. That's all great. I'm very happy with that. But yeah, it's one of those things where he's a bit under, like, the heavy gunship is a bit underwhelming. I feel like what's going to happen in a lot of cases is that he's kind of going to just fly into position, pew-pew his little missiles, fail his scrambler roll, and then that's basically going to be all he does. And then you set up for the follow-up from the interceptors, and then they just go ham with, three CQB apiece.
And that's exactly it. 15 CQB, strength 2080 on your Peacemaker missiles. Like that's the thing is, like, if I was playing against you with my, like, two interceptor-armed models, Rolthosa, I'm letting your heavy gunship live. I mean, honestly, yeah, it might be an issue, like, it might cause me some headaches, but those drones, I know that I need to drop three drones out of that squad almost instantly.
Yep.
Or I'm eating shit. Like, that, like, at four or five, that squad, it has a hell of a punch. So yeah. It's just like, they're my priority, period.
And they are cloaked. Flying with a DR of five is pretty decent.
Yes,
so,
it is.
So, in general, like, yeah, I'm pretty happy with this. I am going to pick it up. I will probably use it. But the big question is it better than the Works Raptor option?
No. And I wish it was.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing you have to kind of come away from it with, is there's some cool stuff. I can use it in conjunction. The interceptors are really, really cool. However, when it comes time to start cutting points, I'm probably still going to lean toward Works Raptor. I think the recon tanks are still really, really fucking expensive, which is why I probably I'm not going to take them in a lot of my games. But the Works Raptor heavy interceptors are fucking fantastic.
Now,
They did change these guys again. This is the third time they've changed them. Now, instead of having a 4-4 DR, they have a 7. Yeah.
7 cloaked, though, is tough.
Well, yeah. I mean, 4-4 cloaked was tough as well. I mean, in terms of people shooting at them, they just got to get it once, right? And they got to hit that 7. So basically, they said, instead of you got to get two hull points on them, it's all or nothing. And I guess I understand that. I guess that's fine. But in general, I don't know. I think I would probably be happier with 4-4.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the biggest difference for me that I was going to say is, I think why I would choose the Works Raptor heavy interceptors over the Directorate Aerial Helix is the Works Raptor Mar.
Absolutely.
You know, that is worth buying, period. So if you don't have the points for two flying elements, your Works Raptor are winning that decision tree every single time.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, we talked about the Recon Helix in the past and what's great about the Recon Helix. So, you know, I am now in a place where I have to make meaningful choices with my Directorate, which is very exciting because that now makes you feel like you're actually doing some list building.
Right? Instead of the, all right, so I've maxed out my core helix. What is the one other helix that I have points for?
Well, depending on the size, but yeah. All right, so I want to make one more comment about the Directorate. For fuck's sakes. Spartan, God damn it. Why does every single army in the game have access to skydrop and or artillery in some way, shape, or form, except for the Directorate, who have the best artillery in the game? It blows me away. And they even changed it. So now Directorate have a 4 starting for both Skydrop and Artillery.
Oh, shit. That's great. Because even though my Rel'Thosa now have Artillery, just throwing that out there.
I know.
I'm still a 4-6.
Oh, no. I'm a 4-4 now, man. I can do it all. I can do none of it because I don't have any fucking oh my God, it kills me. Why? Why at this point are they just sitting here with like sweet stats ready to rock? Oh my God, I want to play this drop list. Does anything in my list have drop? No, none of it. None of it has anything. Why? Why, Lord? When's going to be my time?
Right?
It really pisses me off because it just, it all right, fuck it, whatever. Moving on.
Right?
Let's talk about the Rolthosa.
Indeed. All right, so there were a few minor changes. I mean, Directorate were the ones that saw a lot of kind of overhauls. As I said to Lang, I never got a chance to play with the last version with the Leviathan rules, so there could be changes that I'm missing from Rolthosa, but the big things that I did notice was with the heavy support tank Walker, they gave him the same rule that the Leviathan had, which was if both shard cannons fire at the same squadron, the weapons gain the terror weapon mar, which is a really nice touch. Because, I mean, yeah, it is a lumbering Walker, but I have always combined for that strength, that 20 attack dice blitz onto a heavy. And now, like, 20 dice is usually going to put on 2 hull points worth of damage. With that extra terror weapon robbing you the dice on your command check, I'll probably finish it off right then and there. And that makes me very happy. I really like that change, especially because as a squad size of 1, I have also never had this model survive a game. He is always blown off the board. So I like the fact that I'm going to open up, I'm going to do some heavy damage. If I'm lucky, I'm going to do it for a second time. And then I'm gone, but with that per weapon addition, nice things happening. The other thing that that I saw, which is great, is the core helix unit of heavy tanks, the 1-2, can now purchase recon specialists. So they added this to the medium tanks in the last updates of the rules. Heavy tanks can now buy it too. I think this is incredible. I don't understand why they've decided that the Rolthosa are good.
You're going Dr. Roboto there a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Check your mic.
I guess my mic is fine. I guess I'll just have to ask the wife to stop streaming all of that pornography on her computer.
Yeah, cut it out. You're ruining every show, Terry. Every fucking show.
Every one of them.
So wait, say that again, your core helix.
Okay, so the heavy tanks that come with the core helix can now purchase recon specialist.
Oh, I see.
Which is in addition to the medium tanks out of the core helix that could purchase recon specialists. So Rolthosa are really much becoming the super kind of fast, which is funny because they're still lumbering, the super fast, get up in your face very quickly style army, which, as I was saying, I don't quite understand the need for, because you don't see a huge drop off in effectiveness between effective range and long range.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a squad of 2, which is the only way to roll with these bad boys,
yes.
They're already just fucking incredible. So it's just like, this is a squadron, whereas I said that my heavy support Walker dies every time I take it, I've never lost this squadron, because even on that one turn where you're just in the worst fucking position, I just play my tack card to give them hard target, and you're not chewing through cloaked 7/7/8 with hard target minus mm-hmm. 1. So phenomenal unit, which can now basically get its effective range turn 1. Because, I mean, I've got Recon Specialist, so I get my free move. Then I have a move 7. Like, shit, these guys are getting up there in your face right out of the gates. I like that change. I think it's a little too powerful, so we'll play a couple games and see. But great choice.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of armies. Well, I mean, okay, if you're playing Ceruleans or you're playing Aquans, where you don't necessarily want them to get up in your face really quick. But, like, if you start charging me against my Directorate, I'm all for that. Right.
Oh yeah. So every game that you and I play is the middle of the board is Valley, and we just fucking murder everything that wins. And usually it's a draw because we murder things equally, so we both hit 0 hour on the same turn.
Good times.
Indeed. I mean, other than that, like I said, I wasn't really noticing a big difference. There might have been points tweaks here and there. I do know my Leviathan became 20 more expensive. But other than that, I wasn't really noticing a lot of changes to kind of anything, really. So
Yeah, the important things are remaining the same. Your sky drops remains the same. Your troops remain the same for the most part.
Sorry, one other thing that I did notice, actually, was my universal special role for Ralthosa. They've updated the nanotech wording to give... Because remember, it used to be armored only?
Yes.
Now it's all Ralthosa and Leviathan armored and aerial elements gain enhanced repair systems. So
right on.
That was... I mean, it's still, we all assumed it should have been played, but now it's actually been phrased that way. Otherwise, yeah, there really hasn't been a lot of changes to anything. My light infantry are still baller as fuck. My heavy infantry are even more baller as fuck. I can't wait to get a game in with those. They're so fucking good. Eat 25 attack dice. Fuck off.
All right, so let's talk about the Aerial Helix here, because apparently that wackadoo dragonfly is a heavy battle suit.
Yes, so we live in the Gundam universe, I guess?
Apparently.
I don't know. Like I said, I still love the Robo Dragonfly. I think it's super cool. This Helix is a must-have for Ralthosa players, and I think the biggest reason for it is, one, it is your artillery support. So if you want to be dropping your artillery, which isn't fantastic, but it's still extra damage for free. Because what are we looking at for this bad boy here? We are looking at less points than yours. We're looking at basically the same survivability, because cloaked 778.
Yep.
Isn't that the same as yours?
Nope, mine is cloaked 776.
Oh, wow, okay, so more survivable, love it.
Yes, same but I command have a CQB element. Of 6 in cyber warfare.
Woo! Still a command element, still a drone nexus, which I love. I love the fact that it is a drone nexus, because this means that in games where my towers are being targeted in order to make all of my infantry less effective, I can just zip in with my aerial helix, who has a 24-inch move flat out if I need it, in order to ensure that I'm still buffing all of my infantry to get the maximum damage output out of them. So love the fact that it's a drone nexus. Whatever rules, but I mean, another nexus designator, because whereas you are swimming in Interceptor and have no Nexus designators, I am swimming in Nexus designators.
Hey, I have one Nexus designator on my drone launcher, okay?
I have like 10. Welcome to the Ralthosa.
if I ever got a Skydrop and or artillery marker, I would be required to take a Heavy Helix in order to use a Nexus designator.
In order to make them better. Or just roll with it, go 4, right?
I got a 4, man. I mean, shit, why not?
Let's give it a shot. With that being said, we have 24-inch range, 16 attack dice, interceptor, pinpoint 1, flak launchers. Fucking great weapons. So I am so happy with this heavy battle suit. And I'm also incredibly happy with the 3 drone pods that I get. So same Mars on the weapon. Interceptor, pinpoint 1, 7 AD with a squad size of 3 gives me a 21 combined, which is going to put the herd on a lot of shit. DR is same as your Works Raptor, 7 with cloaked, so all or nothing. But what was interesting here that I saw with them was drone, so they'll have a CQB of 4 if they're within range of that, so that's a good, powerful CQB. But they have hit and run, and that was what I loved most about this squad. Mm. So for those of you that aren't familiar with Planetfall, hit and run allows me to shoot and then move, essentially. So it lets me sort of out of sequence the things. So I'm able to, if I'm in that sweet spot right now and I want to dive out of range of your weapons, I'm able to hit you with my 21 attack dice and then move the fuck to safety, which is... just incredible flexibility. Ask any Aquan player how much they love the ability to choose when to be shot. Like, it's a great rule. This is an expensive Helix for me, though, because at 115 points and a 3.
Oh, what?
Overflowing beer again. 2 episodes in a row. Gotta love the professionalism here. I was just like, man, I'm getting thirsty all this talking. I should open a beer. Fuck.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think you have to appreciate it for the points. I mean, as you can suspect, kind of every one of these aerial helixes all kind of end up in a similar points cost. Although my heavy gunship is 15 points more than yours, My squad of interceptors is going to be cheaper than your squad of drone pods. So it's kind of a bit of a trade-off.
345 for the three of them. And I love them. Like I said, I'm very, very happy. Like, this is a Helix that I want to add at all times, if only for the fact that it is 66% of all interceptor weapons in my entire army.
Right. Yes. Yes, indeed. So yeah, okay, we can kind of see what they're looking at this and saying, okay, well, this is going to be cheaper because it only has one gun, where we all know that Spartan Games looks at things like Cyber Warfare and go, there, Cyber Warfare is amazing. We need, yeah, it's the best. It's just not.
Well, I mean, like all, like even in Firestorm Armada, Cyber Warfare, I feel like it's always priced towards the maximum, most beneficial benefit.
Sure, even, okay.
Well, no. Like, you know, you look at Cyber Warfare in Firestorm Armada, you look at Cyber Warfare weapons here, where it's just like, they are priced as if you're rolling that every single time you fire.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not taking into account the fact that sometimes you just fuck it up. Like, I hate Directorate TAC card in Firestorm Armada, which is just like, free, unstoppable, unblockable Cyber
Warfare.
And I will pay the extra point, so I roll the D6 and take a hazard marker. And you're like, all right.
All right, perfect. Awesome. Wonderful. I've now extra fucked myself, and you got a hazard marker.
Right? But, like, that's exactly it. It's like, we all know that that shit happens. Like, it's like when you win an aborting assault, and you're just like, oh, man, I fucked you, board. Like, so come on, roll the crit, and you're like, hazard marker on the crit. All right, at least it's two hull points. What do I do on my bridge, on my bridge attack? Hazard marker. Fuck right off.
Yep, pretty much. All right, so let's talk about Cerulean's here. Cerulean's not a ton changed for the most part. You still have your artillery support on your heavy walker. You didn't get any upgrades like the Directorate or the Rel'Thosa did on your regular old battle walkers and so on and so forth. Recon Specialist still showing up on a lot of your stuff. So I think there were some points tweaked here and there. The TVs were tweaked, I believe. But in general, they didn't see a huge, huge, huge change, and I don't play them because they're stupid dinosaurs. So let's actually just move straight on to the Aerial Helix and talk about that. So this particular Aerial Helix was the absolute worst offender. In the original picture that I had posted on Spartan Games' site saying this is a complete fucking embarrassment of a release, what they had was they had the heavy Coley gun on top with the same stats as the Harmach precision missile launchers with the Mars switched with another Harmach missile launcher. And then for the arcs and the ranges were also different.
Oh, yeah, and each of the precision missiles had different ranges. And you're like, really, guys?
Yeah, like it was like they had basically mixed up every single thing you could have mixed up. Also, the arcs for both precision missile launchers are front, left, aft.
Which means just pull to the right and they literally cannot attack you.
It is the Derek Zoolander of flyers.
It well, yeah, obviously.
It's not an ambi-turner. It just
dinosaurs aren't ambi-turners. We know that. That's why they went extinct. Welcome to the fucking game. If you could have turned right, you might have avoided the meteor, assholes.
Exactly. Okay, so yes, as it stands right now, they have fixed it. They fixed it, I think, 3 days after they had released it. So that what you have on the heavy interceptor for 270 points is a forward arc scatter terror weapon.
With embarrassingly low AD. Like,
with range 10 and long range 15 with 9 AD and 6 AD, which is not great, not the best. And then you have two sets of Harmach missile launchers with front, left, aft on both, interceptor, precision 2, with some longer ranges, and like a lot of Cerulean stuff, is better at longer ranges. So it's strength 7 at longer ranges, so you're going to get a strength 14 shot out of this guy at long range, which isn't all that impressive for the most part.
Not 270 points.
Well, the precision is kind of the big thing here. Like, you see a lot of stuff with precision tends to have lower AD. But yeah, like, let's compare this to the Directorate 1. The Directorate 1 has an interceptor with its Peacemaker missiles and it's just strength 12, right? So I don't have to combine multiple things and not be able to shoot to the right. So there you have it. Command element, flying vehicle, independent targeting, which is kind of interesting.
Because why would you ever choose to independently target your strength 7?
If you don't have something in your front arc, because you didn't put your whatever. movement 15-20, so slower than the other flyers we've seen so far. DR 877 with 2 shields and 6 CQB. And yeah, so there's really nothing special about this guy. He's just a flyer with some guns.
Mm-hmm.
Is what it comes down to. There's no special rules. There's nothing like particularly interesting about him. Like, you already have Interceptor elsewhere in your list. You don't need to go, and you have good Interceptor elsewhere in your list.
Yes,
light battle walkers for the recons have basically the exact same gun with squads of 4, right? Like, so this heavy gunship is really nothing.
Oh yeah, this is 100% not worth the points. Like, this whole Helix kind of falls apart, because even when we look at totally unimpressive and boring, let's talk about their other heavy interceptor instead of the heavy interceptor gunship. But real,
right.
Real fucking clever there, Spartan.
Yes, yes indeed.
So they also have Harmok precision missiles with interceptor and pinpoint 2. Do not for a second think that they have the same stat lines, because
nope.
Or ranges, for that matter.
Yeah, you're an idiot for thinking that, moron.
Yes, exactly. We're seeing the exact same DR of 7, like, and with 1 shield means that I would love you to take these. This is 5 free TV.
Oh, man. Come
because
on.
7 with 1 shield is so much worse than 7 with cloak.
Oh, easily.
So I'm just going to chain the fuck out of it. So yeah, you've got the same Harmok precision missiles, your attack dice are 4 and 6, so your squad of 3 is throwing out 18 at up to 20 inches, 12 if you can close into them. They're only front arc, so just get behind them, or beside them. Remember, just pull to the right.
Correct.
Okay, pull to the right against all Cerulean flyers, you can't go wrong.
Ceruleans, their visual acuity is based on movement to the right.
To the left.
Yeah,
that's
all
the
to the left.
They fucking see you. If you move to the right, they're
move
just
to
like,
the right.
No one's there. We're
they
safe.
They think you stepped into a TARDIS. Like, they don't know what happened. Oh, my God. No, these are not good. They're basically just
and
four guns.
For 570 points for the whole Helix, like, fucking pass. Like, take literally anything else.
Yeah, they're just... There are more guns, and there's really no reason to have a flyer with a lot of movement that's best weaponry is long range. You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, okay, I can fly out, I can stay at a distance, but 24 inches means I'm putting myself into other anti-air firepower, and that anti-air firepower is going to drop me out of the sky. And again, there's nothing special here. They're just guns. It's just guns. Enjoy.
Yep.
All right,
and you have so many just guns elsewhere that are actually really good.
Yeah.
So I don't see it. I don't see the appeal. I don't even see what they were going for.
All right, so let's talk about the Terrans now.
Sweet.
The Terrans, again, not very similar to the Ceruleans. Not a whole lot changed here. We just have the addition of the Aerial Helix, a couple of points balances here and there. However, your Leviathan has nuclear munitions upgrade now.
Oh, shit.
This model may upgrade its Raptor grenade launcher weaponry to have Terra Weapon Mar in addition to any other effects for an additional 15 points.
Which, why wouldn't you? Because it's anti-infantry, so fuck yeah, I love the Terra up.
I thought it was just nuclear. I love it. So, you know, extra fancy, nice to have. I believe that is pretty much it from what I saw when I was going through there, outside of, again, like TV balancing for a lot of that stuff. Nuclear munitions you can put on your medium battle tanks as well, which is funny.
For 10 well, I was going to say, there were some slight like pinpoint changes because they no longer have the pinpoint 4 dual G72 legacy, which was just dirty as shit.
Yeah.
Wait, so you mean with my 16 attack dice, I'm absolutely going to do a point of damage, if not 2, if my rolls go well. And then I have 4 dice to roll, and if I hit a 6, that's a second and or third point of damage automatically. Sweet.
And I have to giggle, just because, I mean, it's there, but it's so stupid on the Leviathan. The G72 Legacy, its arc is left front. The Shrike, its arc is front right.
Yeah.
And then the Nexus Designator on the same arm is right front. It's fucking stupid, man. Come on. It's just, stuff like that just blows me away. Like,
right?
You can't even make it uniform. Yeah.
Oh, their Terran mediums can now also buy nuclear munitions, which is cool.
The Terran mediums can also get terror for 10 points extra. I don't know if that's necessarily worth it, because keeping those guys cheap is kind of what makes them nice, but I could see if you had the points lying around.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Is if your option is one single fucking logistics point or terror on them, you're going terror all day, every day.
And if you're wondering what else can take nuclear munitions, the Valkyrie light tank can also take it. For 5 points per model.
Interesting. I would
basically anything that has. Yeah.
I would honestly probably take that because even at a squad size of 5, that's 25 points. And again, you have that anti-infantry all-round arc.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to throw out a ton of dice and then terror weapon them, basically, the point that you're hoping for is you do enough damage that with that terror weapon, they lose it on their command check. They'll lose the rest of the squad, and you don't even have to shoot anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd take it. I love it.
All right, so let's talk about the Aerial Helix here now. We have the Heavy Interceptor. It's 250 points, which is the cheapest we've seen so far. The Ralthozo is 250 as well. And what you have here is very similar to the Ceruleans. It's just guns. You have the Quad Shrike Heavy Rotor Guns, which is Corrosive and Interceptor, front arc, 15 AD, 10 at long range, which is 24. Movement is 16, 24, which is the same as the Directorate one. It is 7, 6, 6 for DR with 3 shields and 4 CQB. And what special rules does it have? It has Command Element and Flying.
Woo!
It's just guns. That's all it is. It's just guns.
Yeah.
The interceptor that comes with it is 70 points per model. It has Swift Spear Missiles, which is Corrosive, Interceptor, and Pinpoint 1. Range 15 effective. 4 AD with a squad size of 4, so you're putting out 16 shots. TV of 5. What's its special rules, Nathan?
Flying.
Yes.
Full stop. Flying.
And DR5 with 1 shield. Please give me those free TV.
Oh, that is absolutely free TV. Again, this kind of comes down to why would you bother, especially when the heavy infantry with 6 AD can also buy nuclear munitions.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Fucking 24.
I think that was there originally, and then they spread it out.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say 24 AD with terror. Go whole ham. Like, that's the thing, is like the Terran Alliance Recon Helix was just such a good addition, and the Terran Leviathan is just so incredible that we have a wishy-washy, really soft, really fucking soft, and no flexibility with only forward arc. Like, unlike the Directorate ones that are all round on everything, that kind of gives you the freedom to zip around where you need to, you constantly have to be pointed the right way. And the Interceptors, there's really nothing special about them. If you're at full squad size, 16 AD, big deal. Yeah, you're going to do a point of damage, but you lose 2 guys and you're not doing shit. 2 CQB? Like, it's just, there is so much that is so subpar to mediocre in this entire Helix that you're just like, why would I not just load up on other better weapons? And I mean, the fact that you can take anti-aircraft tanks as your ULLRs, ULLRs, I guess, but like you're not hurting for Interceptor.
No.
You're not hurting for Interceptor at all on this list, so with the dogfighter rule, even with fucking aerial assault and all that, it just kind of falls apart, especially when you compare it to the Hawker Aerial Helix, where they have Swift Spear missiles with 1680, correct, Corrosive, Interceptor. So just like for 235 points, I get the same AD as 280 points worth of Terran Interceptors, not to mention artillery support, not to mention command vehicle. Better CQB, way more shields, and their heavy attackers are basically the same, but with an anti-infantry.
And a higher DR.
Well, yeah, much higher DR.
Oh, one higher.
Well, one, yeah, which works. Trust me, it helps, especially
makes
when
a difference.
Yeah. I'm a Ralphosa player. I hit air shit on fives, okay? That one DR is meaningful.
Right. Well, and that's the thing that makes this really stand out, right? Like, in the sense that you look at them and you compare the two. Okay, you've got the heavy gunship for Hawker. You've got the heavy gunship for the Terrans. Like, yeah, the Hawker one has a worse DR with an extra shield, but it has more CQB. It's elite. It gives up one less TV for some reason. Mm-hmm. And it has artillery. I mean, it's got bigger weapons, and it has artillery, and it's got its whole multi-purpose thing, which is great. And again, like the heavy attack fighter that you get with this particular Helix is better. For 15 points more, it's elite. It's got one higher DR. Mm-hmm. It is same at flat-out speeds. So, I mean, in general, I think it's very, very strange.
Well, yeah, because,
like, are we just paying for the dogfighter rule we don't care about?
Yeah, basically. Because, I mean, like, what you're looking at is when you compare the two of them, the Hawker does everything they do better than the Terran ones. Like, it's almost as if they use the Hawker as a base, and the models for Hawker is so much cooler. I just fucking adore those, like, fucking helicopters versus the F-22 bullshit that they have going on. Give me attack helicopters. all day. But it's just like, it's like they started with the Hawker, and then they're like, let's make it a little bit worse, and we'll charge an inordinate amount of points for a little bit worse.
Well, and it's one of those things where, like, even the Hawker as a whole, we kind of, we didn't necessarily shit on it. We just kind of said, like, well, you're going to skip it. You're going to skip it because you don't
yep.
need it,
and
you're going to focus on all the other stuff. And that is, like, when we're saying, well, Hawker's better because look at this and look at this, look at this, you're still not going to take Hawker.
Oh, yeah, right? You absolutely are not going to take the Hawker, but yet Hawker is better for the points. So it's just like, at the end of the day, your Terran army, what do you want to do? What is your Terran force going to look like? You're still going to take a very fat core Helix because all of your shit is good. You're going to take a Leviathan because now it's giving shields to your infantry, and you're going to take your recon Helixes.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is so full of win in your force. And that's not even talking about your tank destroyers, who are excellent, pinpoint 2, good, solid amounts of attack dice, and that pinpoint 3 heavy support tank. So it's just like, you have so many good options for Helixes that you're not even going to look at the Interceptor Aerial. For the points that you're spending, it's just, it falls flat, completely flat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really unfortunate because, again, comparing it to the Ralthosa one, which is the exact same points cost, the Ralthosa mm-hmm. one has a better gun. Like, just, there it is. It's got a better gun.
And is a command element, and is a drone nexus.
Well, the Terran one is also a command element.
Oh, that's true. But
because it's the main thing for that particular Helix. So anything that's like the main unit for that Helix always has command element. But yeah, like, this thing, stat-wise, basically has better defensive stats. It has cloaked, drone nexus, flying, it's got a nexus designator, it's got a stronger gun, which is essentially the same gun, right? Go down and look at the guys that come with it, the drone pods, they're better. You know, it's just, it, the points cost and the ideas that they came up with for these two in particular were just really, really silly. Like, it seems like these were just very phoned in and completely unnecessary. When you have something like the Aquans, which has got some fucking crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's talk about Aquans here.
Okay.
Again, similar to what we've been saying, if it isn't a directorate, they haven't done a ton with it. It's just been a lot of balancing. I think they did some minor balancing for the Leviathan, but I don't think it's anything crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just the Venom body missiles got stronger.
I think that's all it was, which is great, because yep. who doesn't want stronger guns?
Exactly. Outside of that, yeah, pretty much everything is very, very similar. You can make the crystal nodes robust now, unlike other Aquan Prime elements. Crystal nodes do not lose their sacred armor when they take... Oh, no, that was old. That was there before. Blah, blah, yep. blah, blah. Going down, yelling timber.
That's it. I quit. If we are at singing Kesha on this podcast, that has been JD Gamercast for this lifetime.
I was not singing. I was quoting. All right. So
it's called spoken word poetry, Nathan.
Aquan Aerial Helix. We've got the Vorati, which is 230, so the cheapest we've seen so far for a heavy gunship.
And fucking incredible.
Sorry, and again, stronger weapons than what's on the Terrans.
Yeah, well, and honestly, this is my favorite flyer of the bunch. Like, straight up, I think that what this does for Aquan players is just incredible.
Let's talk about what it does.
Okay, let's talk about what it does. It has an ability called Crystal Formation. I'm not even going to talk about the rest of it because the rest of it is okay. Like, it's good. You've got good guns with good Mars. Your DR is on the low end. You're a little bit slower, which is hilarious for Aquans. But you've got massive CQB, good shields, incredibly low TV. So everything about that is great. But what it has is the Crystal Formation Mar, which you'll remember is the same as on your Crystal Node. So unlike your crystal nodes that have to sky drop down and are now stationary, you basically have a flying mobile bend beams around fucking corners asshole of a fucking target. And that is what makes the Aquan so incredible. Because this is one of the things Terry encountered with. She played against Myrelthosa. She wasn't using her crystals well enough to really just kind of ignore my cloaked. Because when you target your fucking crystal formation, you can be at an effective range, you'll have all of your dice explode, and then you just bounce that around and transfer it onto something, so you get to ignore most defensive Mars, especially cloaked. And the fact that it still has hit and run, which allows it to, again, shoot and move if you need it to with its 1680 gun with a great range. And it has sky drop, so if you don't want to deploy it because you know your opponent is going to target it, you can still drop it from the fucking sky. So it's just like the cheapest points-wise, phenomenal gun. The fact that it is a flying formation and a command element, not that really Aquans need command elements because it isn't their whole fucking shtick being elite quality on everything, but you have it if you need it, I guess.
Well, but there's stuff that can, like, reduce, right? Like terror and all these other things that can knock down the amount of dice that you roll. So
I guess that's true.
It is extra nice to have, but yeah.
Yeah. But that's the one rule on there where you shrug your shoulders. Cause you could like, you really couldn't care less. Like you're just like, if I use it, great. But otherwise at the end of the day, hit and run with a flying crystal formation and a 1680 fucking corrosive interceptor gun.
Mm-hmm.
You're all about it, especially with such a low TV and a high CQB. Like, this is the all-around threat. This is probably point-for-point the best heavy intercept, like, big gunship we've seen out of all of them. So
yeah, I think it's right up there with the Relthosa one in the sense that it is giving you artillery for your army so that it becomes a bit of a must in terms of what you're playing with. The fact that it has a strong gun. Yeah, it's generally lighter, but three shields with a really big CQB, and the fact that it's only TV4, Skydrop, Hit and Run, all that kind of great stuff on top of the utility that it brings you does make it the best, to say the least. Now, the interesting thing here is that when you go down and you look at the interceptors for 90 points, you're basically just going to skip these. DR6, one shield, like we were talking about before, the squad is 5 TV. You're basically just giving up TV for a strength
16.
Yeah, strength 16 gun, which is really not all that impressive for the most part.
It's literally what your heavy interceptor gunship is throwing out. You are more likely to take two aerial helixes at 460 than you are to take one maxed out because the four interceptors are costing you 360 points versus 230.
It would be cheaper, that's what I was going to say. And they're not bringing anything special to the table. They're just more guns, and as we kind of said with the Ceruleans and the Terrans, it's unnecessary. You're not dying for these right here.
No.
So, yeah, I would be much, much more interested in seeing somebody taking two heavy interceptors as two aerial helixes and just focusing on using those for using the redirect crystal mirror. All right, so this brings us to the Dundranzi. Very few changes. Maddie was kind of talking to me about a few, but basically what he was saying is it, for the most part, remained the same.
Mm-hmm.
You can still skydrop your Leviathan. They have another misprint that they haven't fixed where you can see that there's supposed to be some sort of pinpoint on the mangonel railgun on the left arm, but there's just no text in it because why
well,
would
I mean,
notice that?
Again, we do know that the right... See, what I find funny about this Leviathan is with the Terran one, the left arm had a front left arc.
Yep.
For the right arm, it had a front right arc. And then for these, it's just like front, left, right. They're both the same. And you're like, really?
Apparently because, I don't know.
I guess Dendrenzi Leviathans are just more flexible.
They're just better.
They are more flexible. They do that yoga. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Downward dog.
Now, what we do see on the Leviathan is reflective inner plating. All successful pinpoint rolls that would cause additional damage to this element must be re-rolled. Now, I know that that's something Maddie would fucking love because pinpoint ruined his day last time he played his Dendrenzi Leviathan because I think he took two extra, like two of his hull points were from pinpoint.
Well, and with Dendrenzi DRs being what they are, pinpoint is truly the bane of your existence on all of your multi-hull point stuff.
Absolutely.
13 is so hard to get at the, like, your opponent's never hitting 26. I mean, how much Firestorm and Planetfall do we play? Have you ever seen that many successes? Yeah, maybe once. Ever.
Right.
So it's, you're ever taking a single hull point against the biggest attack. So to take a point, and then lose another because he got lucky and rolled a six, it stings.
There you go. All right, so you still can't take the heavy infantry. We've talked about that before.
But my God, are they good? Like, can we talk about how good the...
We already did.
The Dendrenzi heavy infantry that you cannot take are? I mean, TV4, that's incredible, considering 24 attack dice on your four squad size.
Yeah.
And elite quality DR6, bulky, hard target, -1. They camp objectives. Dendrenzi players, look at them, fall in love with them, and never, ever take them because
just
none of your helixes...
Like they don't exist.
And because none of your helixes can actually take them. But my God, eventually, one day, maybe your field support can take it.
Maybe.
I don't know.
We'll figure it out one of these
days. Or they'll fix the typo and let you take them.
All right, so... Dendrenzi Federation, aerial forces, we've got the Orestes, heavy gunship, heavy interceptor gunship is 250, it's got high DR, so 987.
Yep.
On the undercover cop.
Welcome to the game.
No, 987 on the other kind of, alright. That's for all my G's out there. again, stronger gun than the Terrans. You've got all-around missiles, which is what we were talking about with the Directorate, which makes it really, really fancy. Artillery support on this guy with the Nexus Designator. Fearless, flying, and hit-and-run.
And
elite quality. TV5, gorgeous model, fast. CQB of 6. I mean, for fuck's sakes, you're going to take this thing.
Oh, yeah. You're loving life. I mean, the armament is good. It's artillery, which, again... You don't really have elsewhere.
None in
so
Ardent and Renzi.
You're absolutely going to take it. You're going to love it. You're fast. You're tough. Like, everything about it is just really fucking good. And then even your interceptors are pretty fucking good.
Yeah, for a squad size of 3 at 80 points apiece, they're cheaper than the other squad size 3 options. They don't have nearly as much firepower, which is really unfortunate. However, they are DR7, which makes them brings them up to that Works Raptor level.
But
they kind of
no cloak to no shield. So
correct.
These are probably the easiest to drop DR7s that we've talked about today. But I would still take them because what's 240 points in this game?
Well, at 80 points apiece, they're priced appropriately, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the TV of 4 instead of TV of 5 compared to the other ones. That's the biggest difference that you're looking at here. However, in my mind, they are the first to cut. You're absolutely going to take the heavy interceptor gunship for the artillery support. It's going to be nice to have.
Yeah.
But these guys, kind of take them or leave them. They're just guns.
The question is, do you still have points left after your skydropping Leviathan and your RSN Assault Helix with the fucking...
Clearly not.
Battle Robot and your Temple of Dramos?
Nope, absolutely not. So, yeah, you're going to be cutting points, and these guys are the first to go, but... if you want artillery support, this is the only way to do it, and it's a decent way to take it for the most part. So that's kind of what we're looking at here. All right, so we've kind of talked about it here, but Nathan, who's the big winner? Who's the big loser in your mind?
Big winner for me is the Aquans. I just think that the idea of that flying crystal formation gives them such incredible flexibility, because I know that from in all of my games, both with and against the Aquans, they live and die off those two crystal formations that they can sky drop. So being able to get an extra one that is mobile, allowing you to place it where you need it to be placed, it's just fucking key for them. Like, it's such an incredible addition to their force. Plus, they talk about one of the rules that we did that I missed in my excitement to talk about it is the fact that all shots fired at that formation count as being placed before modifier. So it's actually easier to hit. Like, it's actually the best crystal formation you have in your army, and the fact that it's fast. Did you miss that one?
I totally missed that.
Yeah, so all of your shots count as being fucking placed.
Wow, nice.
When you are shooting at it. So, I mean, it's such an incredible, incredible addition to the Aquan list, and it plays up the way that army needs to play, because Aquans always have the lowest firepower, but they're very fast, and they have high TVs.
Long range.
What?
And they're very long range.
There's medium long range. Cerulean's will outrange them. Even my Ralthosa were outranged.
Well, Cerulean's outrange everybody.
No, I know, but even my Ralthosa outranged them. The way that your Aquans end up having to play is your high dice hit and run units have to stay the fuck out of dodge. So they're going to shoot, then they're going to move, but your crystal formations allow you to always be getting the minimum amount of shots and to stay out of line of sight. So your army lives and dies on the way that you place those crystals, but being static, a canny opponent could either blow them up or avoid them. This flyer forces the issue. So I love it. I think it's great. I think the big winner is definitely the Aquans. Big loser has to be the Ceruleans, because it just does nothing for them.
Yeah, I think the Ceruleans and the Terrans.
Terrans are in the same boat.
The only reason why I lean toward the Ceruleans being the big losers is that even though the Terrans are kind of on par in terms of the fact that they're not great, the Ceruleans one ends up costing more, is just guns, and at least with the Terrans, if you don't like theirs, you still have Hawker to go toward. Mm-hmm. And yes. Hawker at least brings something to you, whereas the Ceruleans, this is your only aerial option. Your natural allies is a recon helix, and so you're kind of stuck with these as flyers if you want any. And like I said, they don't fit the list, really. Like, the high mobility is unnecessary when you're trying to stay at long range. Everything else in your army is going to be sitting at long range, plinking away at long range, taking their time. So there's no real reason to put these guys in your force, and their shit can't shoot on the right side, and that's just the worst. That is the fucking worst. There's nothing you can do about it. I think the Aquans...
Hug the right board edge so everything's to your left.
Correct.
Only way you can play it.
The Aquans are absolutely the best looking on paper, in the sense that they are bringing so much to it. The fact that they're pretty light... with that 666 with three shields is the only big question mark there. But because they're the cheapest, I think it's totally acceptable to put those into your list. Everyone else, it's questionable. You might take it, you might not take it. I think if you're playing Dendrenzi, Ralthosa, or Directorate, you have an option, and you could absolutely go that way.
Yeah, I mean, if I have the, as a Ralthosa player, if I have the points, I definitely want it because, again, it's kind of my only interceptor. And there's enough flyers out there that I'm going to be worried about that I want to take it. I mean, with that being said, taking an aerial helix means not taking a second recon helix, and that might be where I end up cutting it for. my recon helix is fucking incredible. I felt when we covered them that they have the best recon helix in the game. I still feel that way. And at least that way I have that one medium walker with an interceptor weapon if I choose to double down on a recon helix. But that's what I really like about the way the Ralthos are set up right now is like, when you look at certain options, like for Aquins, there's no reason to ever take a Recon Helix, so why not double down on your Aerial Helixes and get two Flying Crystal Formations? It's absolutely going to do you more good. Ralthosa, we have a good Aerial Helix. We have great Recon Helix, so do I double down, which is going to be very expensive? Do I split them? Like, what do I do?
I think you're more likely to split them.
Maybe. Like I said, you know me in my love of tubes of spiders shot from orbit. So why take six when I can have eight tubes of spiders?
Yeah, and for Directorate, the big problem is because Works Raptor are so good and they're so worth it, and they're a Recon Helix, it really does come down to, do I want to take the Aerial Helix, or do I want to take my existing Recon Helix, which is really, really good because of the fact that I get to take my heavy infantry, I get to take my my Anarchist light tanks, which are really good as well, and I get to take the my combat carrier, the Intruder combat carrier, which now has assault vehicle, and in the Recon Helix has Recon Specialist.
Oh yeah, like that's the big question for our Directorate players is. Straight up, you now have three options that are all kind of competing for the two choices that you can have.
Yes.
We've already talked about how Works Raptor for that TAC card is probably always going to be the auto-include, and your Recon Helix is phenomenal. So you're just like, even though your Aerial Helix is good, it kind of gets muscled out by existing options, and that's what I'm really appreciating about Planetfall now. The game has been out for 9 months at this point, and we're finally starting to see competing selections, competing options that are forcing you to make hard choices. I mean, some are easier than others. Cerulean, pass. Terran, pass. Just stick with your awesome Recon Helix. Now that you can buy nuclear, just fucking go whole ham.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it presents a couple of interesting dilemmas with the Directorate in the sense that, yes, I want to take Works Raptor. Okay, Works Raptor or auto-include. Fine, great. Conversation over. Okay, yeah, I want to take my Recon Helix for my Anarchist light tanks and my heavy infantry and my Recon Specialist assault vehicle, so on and so forth, transports. But, oh, man, if I'm taking my heavy infantry, I want to have that drone, that mobile drone nexus of my Aerial Helix. Fuck.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot about that. But, yeah, you're absolutely right.
I have to make some choices.
When you have your heavy infantry for your recon, you need that drone controller. And the only other one, if I'm not mistaken, is the heavy tanks off of your core helix, which are lumbering. So they're going to be far back.
And also basically the heavy tanks are all I can do it with. One of them got extended range, so it's not going to be moving to begin with. To be honest with you, I'll probably just skip the aerial helix for the heavy infantry because of the fact that, it makes them regular, and it makes them have one additional CQB, but for the most part, I'm not dying with their already decent CQB.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm much, much happier with the fact that my transports have assault carrier now as the MAR, so that's absolutely happening, right? Like, it's happening. Mm-hmm. Every time I drop troops, they show up and they go hard. And I think that that's the thing I'm most excited for. And already the fact that they're throwing out 20 cyber warfare from the heavy infantry, that is the choice, which means that yes, now that Works Raptor is the auto include and my Recon Helix is so good, I just can't look at the Aerial Helix and go, oh yeah, man, that's got to get into the list when all it's really giving me is a drone nexus and some pretty good flyers with some pretty good interceptor. I already have enough interceptor. So that's the only thing. That's the only question mark. It's like, yeah, they're good, but I don't know if I can ever make it work to where I'm happy because I have to give up something I don't want to give up.
Yeah.
There you have it, guys. There you have it, ladies and gents. So that brings us to the weekly listener poll. And the weekly listener poll question is, it's kind of a quality of life question for gamers. And in general, I think that, I don't know, if I word it this way, we're all just going to answer the same way. So I'm trying to think of a better way to word it.
Mm-hmm.
It basically has to do with, you know, like when a company puts out a shoddy product in the form of rules, right? You know, where, like, I was supposed to be like, how did it make you feel? But that's not a poll.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we had some posts on the Facebook page where somebody had gone and bought some of the GW terrain.
Yeah.
And posted his horrors of putting it together, Mr. Fred Richards.
Yeah, and, I saw that. I didn't know what kit it was, but that looked...
It's the Age of Sigmar, like, it's one of the Age of Sigmar pieces of terrain for the Sigmarites. Yeah, it looks so bad, and it doesn't fit together, and he's just like, wow, I paid a lot of money for this thing, and it is garbage. You know, it's really, really funny, because you want to have nice terrain on your table. Like, I think all tabletop gamers want to have nice terrain on their table, but you talk to so many people who are just like, dude, fuck pre-built, just build it yourself, and who cares? But I know a lot of people look at pre-built terrain, and they go, like, it's a foam hill with flock on it. I'm not interested in that. You know, oh, it's a cardboard building. That does nothing for me. I want to play on a table that looks really cool. So I think it is kind of a weird balance that a lot of people have to, you know, have to deal with. But I don't know. I'm trying to form this into a good weekly listener poll question. It's just not happening in my head right now.
Okay. What about, and I'm totally going off script from what you're trying to go for. I'm just going to throw something out there.
Yeah, hit me.
What about, would you take a unit whose rules are mediocre if the models were incredible? Because I feel like that's kind of where you're at with things like the Terran Aerial Helix and, you know, things like that, where it's just like, you know, the rules aren't great, but goddamn, those models, like,
I feel like we've asked that question in the past.
It's true.
Where we've basically said, like, have you... Well, I know we have asked it in the past where we've said, like, have you ever taken something just because aesthetically you like it even though you know it's garbage?
Yeah.
We've definitely asked that in the past. But, yeah.
I don't know what else to ask.
Okay, so here's the question then. Here's the question I want to ask. I think I've sorted it out with your help.
Okay. You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Fuck you.
What? Huh?
Oh, yeah, you were supposed to say fuck you back. Okay, so would you buy the models for a unit with rules being unavailable, as they were in this release, or rules being broken, as they were in this release? Or would you wait? That's the weekly listener poll question. Basically, the idea here is that we see the models and we're like, fuck, I can't wait for that shit. And we pre-order them and, like, people get them on the site and they're ready to rock and roll. And then they end up being stuck with them, which is why I don't pre-order anything anymore, really. Like, very rarely do I pre-order something nowadays. Because I think pre-order culture is fucking terrible. We'll talk about that and maybe something shiny, because I think there's some funny shit there you might not have known about. But in general, I think, you know, if the rules were broken or they weren't out yet, I wouldn't even think about buying it, personally. Like, I have no urge to buy something until I know whether or not I'm going to use it.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is Terry and I were talking today, and there's a really nice model for one of the Wild West Exodus factions that I'll never play that I do have. And I was like, maybe I'll paint it up. And she's like, no, you won't. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I really only paint model that I will play games with.
Yep.
So for me, I would absolutely never pre-order shit, because I agree. I think it's bullshit. And I would much rather purchase models from Kyle. Like, go to my local gaming store, buy them when they're in stock. I don't care if I have for a month or more.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather feed his kid in addition to Spartan's kid. And, you know, if the rules aren't there, if the rules just don't do it for me, I'm going to pass. Like, I really am, because I really, truly only paint models that I will play games with.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I don't paint models for enjoyment anymore. Painting models is work. It's been that way for a while, where I'm just like, I gotta get this shit done, man, so I can play this game. I still actually do like painting, because I like coming up with color schemes and things of that nature, but yeah, for the most part, it's a bit weird. All right, mm-hmm. Hey Nathan, something shiny.
Something shiny.
So, talking about pre-order culture, have you had your ear to the ground in terms of, like, the gaming industry nowadays and what it's looking like for pre-orders and stuff?
No. No, okay. I have not. I mean, I've seen a lot of ridiculous pre-order, like, if you pre-order this now, you will get a token for a foot massage, right, and you'll get, like, this fucking plastic sword, even though nothing in the game uses swords. And you're like, sure. What?
So basically, pre-order culture and, like, DLC culture has gotten really, really aggressive now. Mm-hmm. And it's to the point where games are putting so much of the responsibility on the consumer that it's ridiculous, right? I mean, for years we've been hearing stuff from like EA and all these other big publishers who spend millions and millions and millions of dollars developing a game, sell millions and millions and millions of copies, and go, we lost money on it.
Yes.
You know, so we have to raise the prices. And the prices of games have gone up, right? Now the prices of games in Canada is $75, right? You want to play... You want to play fucking Metal Gear Phantom Pain? $75.
Like, although, like we said last week, why would you? Like, why is Metal Gear still a thing?
Why is it still a thing? So basically, you know, we've also seen over the last 2 years or so where instead of actually selling you a game and then having content in the game, what they do is they build a game with all this content and then they chop it up for pre-orders, right? So like, oh, you want to play Arkham or you want to play the Alien Isolation game. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we've got, you know, Ripley's in it and, you know, Sigourney Weaver's voicing it and so on and so forth. And then they just go, oh, but you don't get to play that unless you pre-order. Even though it's like on disc and it's all available. And so
So, I did see, like, actually Alien Isolation's pre-order thing was I never picked that game up specifically because of the fact that they're like, you can only play the Nostromo missions if you pre-order. I was like, you know what?
Yeah, fuck you. Exactly.
I've never bought the game.
That is my exact feeling toward it. It's just like, you know what, dude, fuck you. No, I'm not, fuck you. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pay for a game. So,
pay twice for a game.
Phantom Pain, we talked about how it was just like a Steam installer on the disc. Because when people pre-ordered the PC version, it was just a Steam installer on a disc that came in the mail. Like the game. They didn't even get it at like the game disc. It was just a Steam installer.
That's incredible.
And one of the most bizarre things that happened recently is the new Deus Ex that is coming out. The new Deus Ex Human Revolutions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That game has the most bizarre pre-order structure. Now, here's how it works. You pre-order at various levels. And at each level, you basically get to pick the bonus that you want, right? So, like, if you pre-order at this tier and you pay this much, you get to choose between, like, the soundtrack of the game or, like, some posters, in-game items or this in-game item, this skin or this skin for your character. And you basically go up this tier list of what you get to pick for your pre-order, which is hilarious in the sense that basically what they're actually doing is picking what you don't get. Because normally for pre-orders like that, that's just like, here's the bundle, you get everything, right? Mm-hmm. If you buy the top one, you get all of the things. But in this one, they're like, no, you basically pick what you want and then pick what you're not getting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what makes this so insane is that they've basically combined pre-orders and Kickstarter.
Wait, what?
Each tier has its own tier of rewards depending on how many people pre-order the game. So if so many people pre-order the game, you unlock bonus content for various tiers. So what they've basically done is taken the consumer and turned them all into advocates for pre-ordering the game so that they can get more pre-order bonuses.
But why do people still pre-order games when the last Assassin's Creed was literally unfinished? Like,
broken.
The last Assassin's Creed game, when it launched, would sometimes game crash on the load screen, which meant that you never even got to get into the game before you had to restart your console because it was such a broken piece of shit, let alone completely unplayable gameplay elements. Like, why? Why do people still pre-order? Like, how stupid are people? I guess, you know what, Donald Trump is running for president, there's a lot of stupid people. And I guess Lang's put his microphone on mute, or he ran off to go shit himself. So,
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
I kicked a thing out. So yes, basically, we all remember back when pre-orders actually meant something. It meant get yourself a physical copy of the game in store before the store sells out, and you have to wait a couple weeks before they restock.
Yes.
That's what pre-ordering meant originally. And now, that means nothing, because we live in a digital era where you don't even get the disc when you buy the game. You get a Steam installer to go download a digital version of the game. So it's not even about, am I going to get this game on launch day? You will always be able to get the game on launch day.
Sometimes, like Diablo 3 and SimCity, you won't be able to play the game that you bought on launch day, because
you gotta get that
DRM. Gotta stop all the thieves.
Now, the funniest thing about the Deus Ex thing is that if you hit the top tier, if everyone in the world pre-orders a copy of Deus Ex, they will release the game 4 days early.
Oh, shit. 4 days?
Holy shit.
You know what? I take back everything I said. I'm going to put my money down. 4 days, son. It's like they ran out of ideas. It's like they literally ran out of things to offer, so they were just like, 4 days early, okay, let's do it. That's arbitrary enough.
Here's the thing, right? If it works, somebody is a genius, right? Like, somebody is getting a promotion, right? The guy who came up with that idea in the meeting is getting a promotion. If it fails, who cares? Because you still sold as many pre-orders as you were going to sell, right? But it's so bad. Like, it's the worst shit. And it's so like, if you just go to the website, it's so fucking funny. All right. So, anyways.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much what it's come down to.
That is fucking awful.
That has been JD GamerCast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.